thanks for joining us on the Space Show.
Thank you, Andrew.
Global warming's a great problem. We've just heard on the NASA space story about global warming, and it's caused by methane and carbon dioxide. Which of those two has the greatest effect in global warming?
In terms of per unit volume, methane appears to have a significantly greater effect, although there is more carbon dioxide around. It looks like methane's probably 30 times as critical on a volume per volume basis. But it's more pernicious than that. It looks like, and this there's a degree of uncertainty, but it looks like when the Earth warms up because of the greenhouse effect, plant life is stimulated. So carbon dioxide is actually fixed or taken out of the atmosphere, which is a stabilizing thing. But methane comes from things like rotting vegetation. And so when the Earth warms up, vegetation rots faster, which means methane is released faster. So there's a danger of a positive feedback effect and a runaway effect. So understanding where methane comes from, its sources, how it's fixed, its sinks, and its dynamics, where it is in the atmosphere, how long it lasts in the atmosphere, are very, very critical things for determining whether it's going to be a major player in global warming.
So obviously then, if we're going to understand and possibly avoid any global warming problem, we'd need to be able to know how much methane there is in the air.
That's right. We have only a very limited amount of information on that from things like air samples taken at places like Cape Grim. But there isn't a database of where it is and how much there is and how it varies on a daily or a seasonal basis. And as of today, there isn't an instrument flying that can tell us that, nor is there an instrument proposed for the next few years that can tell us that. And that's why this Australian proposal for an instrument is so exciting.
So rather than have people all around the world with little bottles catching samples of air, we put an instrument on a satellite which orbits the Earth 15 times a day and looks down on the Earth and measures from there, where there's no air,
yes,
the amount of methane in the air. Now, how can we do that?
This is done by spectroscopy. We're looking at the so-called absorption signature for the methane in the same way that you can use infrared spectrometry to look at the components of a piece of plastic film or pollution in water on the ground in a laboratory. You can use spectroscopy to look at what's in the atmosphere from above the atmosphere.
So spectroscopy is like a rainbow, splitting the radiation, the light, if you like, into its different component colours. And then you examine those colours, and from that you can tell there's methane there.
That's right, and in this case, the colours of interest are in the infrared, so they're beyond the red. They're a long way into the red.
This instrument, then, it's never been made anywhere else in the world.
No. People have been looking at different ways of detecting methane, and a lot of these are so-called active ways, using things like lasers in LIDAR systems, which are means of blasting the atmosphere with a laser and looking at what's backscattered and determining from that the contents.
The LIDAR is a light radar.
A light radar, yes. And
you send a beam of light down, and you get the reflection, just like you do with radio waves, and you get a reflection for ordinary radar.
That's right, and in the same way, the time of return tells you the depth in the atmosphere. The problem is that lasers are not very convenient things to fly. They're not reliable, they have high power requirements, they're hard to cool. So in general, if you can sidestep the use of lasers, you're better off. And that's what the proposal by Professor Merv Lynch from Curtin University is attempting to do in this so-called GAMS instrument, or Global Atmospheric Methane Sounder. The term sounder is worth pointing out. It's hoped that this instrument can not only look down and say there's this amount of atmospheric methane below me on my footprint, but it can say there is this amount of atmospheric methane at this height and this amount at this height. In other words, it can profile the vertical distribution of methane as well as the total amount of methane. And looking at the vertical distribution is interesting because it can say where the methane comes from where it goes in the atmosphere and where it returns, for instance, into the ground.
So presumably, if methane's coming out of the ground somewhere, low down you would find a lot of methane. Whereas another part of the world where methane is being soaked up, if you like, or absorbed, presumably you get less methane in that area at the ground level.
Yes, and presumably...
And you can actually tell that from the satellite.
Yes. That's a function of what we call the signal-to-noise capability of the instrument and its resolution. If we can see with sufficient precision the methane infrared signal, then we believe that, yes, you can see the vertical distribution and hence tell a lot about whence it came and where it went, so to speak.
This sounds extremely exciting, obviously of world importance. What recognition is it getting from the Australian industry, Australian government, and perhaps from overseas?
I think it's fair to say on all three levels it's receiving quite a bit of excited interest. At the Australian industry level, Australian industry is certainly interested in undertaking studies of this instrument with an aim to building one or more of these to prove the concept. The Australian government is certainly interested in the issue of global warming. It's interested in remote sensing, and it's interested in applying the two. And the Australian Space Office, I think it's fair to say, is interested in instruments such as GAMS. And the international community is interested for a number of reasons. Indeed, the GAMS proposal has overseas inputs. The University of Wisconsin is one of the collaborators in developing the idea. One of the great things about space programs is that they do tend to be multinational and collaborative, so that you get an exchange of ideas, an exchange of peoples, and in a sense an exchange of cultures, which is a nice thing in a global sense.
Yes, most people think, when they think culture, they think of music, opera, and so on, and they don't realise that space is in fact part of our culture.
Yes, and the interchange of challenging ideas and techniques is a cultural interchange in a way.
Right, well, thank you for joining us today on The Space Show.
It's been a pleasure, Andrew.